Oh my God! Who is this person in front of me? Look who it is!
Oh,
all right, everybody, you are live on Shally's Alley. It is August 18th, Friday, of course, and around 1 p.m. ish. Today, yeah. I have a face that you probably recognize. You might have seen him around at, oh, I don't know, maybe a couple of conferences or so. I've certainly seen them around, probably seen too much of them. Steve Levy. In New York. You're still in New York, right?
I'm still in New York, yeah.
Still in New York.
I'm on Long Island.
Long Island. Man, Steve and I go so far back. I know I say that with some of our guests, but, you know, I've been around a long time. Steve's been around a long time. Funny story. The two of us together were the very first bloggers in our industry. Long, long time ago, there were three of us that started out the first three blogs on and what was then ere.net. And that was, you know, before they started spinning off to all the different branches and everything. And they're like, hey, do you want to blog? I'm like, sure. And I think within the same week, Steve posted something, I posted something, and the other blogger posted something. And so we were the original bloggers in the recruiting industry. And we've known each other for, gosh, near 20 years?
No, 25, Charlie.
25 years?
Right at the beginning of ERE, it was 98.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. 98 in San Diego. Yeah. So it's been a bit. And I wanted to have you on the show for a while. It sounds like you're doing all right. And I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to just jump right into it. Since you and I go way back.
Right into it. By the way, for people to get a sense of what it was like in the nascent days of ERE.
Yeah, nascent.
I remember at the time I helped move a company from Norwalk, Connecticut to York, Pennsylvania. And at the time they figured, you know, 85% of the people would relocate down to York, Pennsylvania. look, my Chewidians, York's a really nice town. 15 people
wanted to do it,
wanted to go down. And so I ended up having to rebuild. I was leading TA. I had to rebuild the company in a place where our top two competitors were 10 minutes away from each other. And this is globally. And so I that's where I don't remember exactly how I stumbled on it, but I do remember us going back and forth. Back in those days, you had to type a response in the form, mm-hmm. wait a while, could be hours.
Yep, for it to be cleared.
For it to be posted. Cleared and come back.
Yep.
We were going back and digging all the things, literally, all the things that are part of a sorcerer's toolkit. You know, you, myself, Jim Stroud, Jimmy was there.
You know that got deleted, right?
No.
Yeah, when they switched from the old static blog system to the new one,
yeah,
all that stuff just got lost.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. No,
I
no,
was,
no.
You no. have it?
No, Manister says he has it on hard.
Oh, he says it's offline, right?
Yeah,
right.
It's all offline. And,
but I tried to use Wayback Machine and stuff to try to pull it up, and nothing. No. Yeah, it's gone.
I mean, there were some incredible conversations, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning, going back and forth between.
Yeah, I remember one of them had something to do with a Picotini.
Yes. Gosh. And so, but that's how far back we go. We really haven't changed much.
Online forums. No, except for you have more hair.
No. Yeah, it's on my chin back.
Yeah, it migrated. Yep.
But it's all gray now.
It's all, yep. Mine's getting there, man. I'm catching up. I got my skunk stripe here. But I did have a couple of questions that I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
And I can't believe I never asked you this before. I know I have never asked you this before because we've known each other for so long. So I'm super curious to know the answer. What was it that really captured your interest about sourcing that made you get into this? Like what brought you in? Not how did you get here, like, you know, by accident or whatever, but like, what was it that attracted? It was like, oh, this is interesting. I want to do this. What was that thing?
I think the thing to remember, there's a saying that I use, and many who are going to listen and have heard me say it, there's no such thing as a former Marine, a former Jesuit, a former bartender, or a former engineer. You know this, and many folks. I mean, I'm a degreed engineer. I worked as an engineer. I always went down, even as a kid, firstborn child of French immigrants, who graduated from high school, and that's it. I always went down rabbit hole. Why? How does this work? Take things apart and look under the hood, and oh, that's how it works.
Okay.
And
but you know the difference between an engineer and a scientist?
It probably has to do looking at the shoes, I'm sure.
I had to explain this to my son the other day. So a scientist is one that wants to take it apart and see how it works, right? The engineer wants to put it back together, and there'll be pieces left out, and it'll still work.
And it still worked. And that's the same thing. You know, I think what endeared me, a couple of things endeared me to sourcing. Number one, I have no recruiting training whatsoever. It's not.
Other than the 25 years.
No, 38 years total.
Geez. All right.
But surprisingly, and I know this from you about you as well, we're actually closet introverts. And, you know, when I grew up, started, you know, getting better at recruiting and sourcing, well, you got to get on the phone. You got to call people.
Yep.
I was not very confident. I was not very good on the phone. I was actually pretty damn poor on the phone. I was a shy person, period. Frankly, if it wasn't for sports, I'd still be a shy person.
But interesting side note, you used to be a lifeguard, for people that didn't know that.
Yes, I am. All of my tattoos are ocean related. I was a swimmer, so hashtag chlorinated. Call out to Shannon Pritchett and all the other swammers in the audience.
Right.
But what got me about sourcing was, and I don't know the nucleation point of it, but it was, holy shit, I can find out things about people.
Right.
That people don't think are available.
Are out there.
And it just came easy. It was like math. You know, I've taken, college, grad school, you know, grad math, grad statistics, multivariate stuff. I love numbers. I love digging into things and figuring out the why. And there's this continuous, you know, like in software engineering, continuous integration, continuous deployment, continuous improvement. I was schooled in continuous improvement, and I just really enjoyed the fact. I looked at the process. I was a customer of recruiting before I got into recruiting myself.
You were a hiring manager.
No, I was. I was being hired. I was very disappointed.
You were the product.
Yes, I was very disappointed in how, you know, companies recruited people.
I wonder how many candidates out there are disappointed at the advances or lack of advances or of the process. Like, especially someone who has, you know, maybe if you're just entering the workforce now, you really don't have anything to compare it to. But someone who has maybe been recruited several times and has seen no change with all, you know, like, I wonder if there's people out there that are like, wow, this feels exactly like 10 years ago when I was recruited and nothing's changed. I wonder if that's really common.
It is common. You know, this the deja vu all over again effect. But you can tell.
Sitting in a sourcing nursing home.
Jeremy, you're next.
Oh my God.
But the interesting thing is that what happens because the process hasn't been transparent. And as a quick aside, you know, before we got on board, I told Shally, and we you know, he understood. You
too
know,
much regulation, too many laws, too many restraints.
But the two things is that I crave for now in this phase of my career are simplicity and honesty. And this profession has done a really poor job
of both of them.
Of late, particularly you know, early 2022 when all this TA bloodletting took place, and it's continued to this day, we're left with an inordinate amount of exceptionally talented human beings that, you know, are finding out that, quite frankly, the bulk of recruiting is average or worse.
Unfortunately, that's because it's the bulk.
It's the bulk. Right?
Could argue the bulk of just about anything is average, but the or worse part is the concerning part, right? So yeah. So basically you got into this because you were enraptured by the finding and the finding of, you know, the puzzle solving, the problem solving. Like, by the way, that happens to be the DNA of most sorcerers. But you're staying in it now because it still makes you feel good to make a difference. However, you're seeing that it's like you said, it's below average, and you're looking for this simplicity and this honesty. That's what's keeping you in there.
That is absolutely keeping, and knowing that, you know, you and I have, and actually many people are commenting, we've had the stage of the community for many decades now, and we're not giving up on the message. We're not giving up on the teachings.
I got a little bit of miles left.
And look, my dad's going to be 100 next month.
No.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere soon.
Wow.
And, I have the luxury of having the hat Jerry Crispin moved into my town a couple of months back. And it's a joy to have. He's my mentor. He's a person. You know me, you and I both are afflicted with diarrhea of the mouth from time to time. But when Jerry talks, I simply shut up. I mean, it's kind of like my wife. I know to shut up. But he too is on a mission to leave TA in a better place.
Okay, so we're getting to the meat of it. This is what's captivating you now is a legacy. So you this is what you're calling your legacy, leaving your legacy behind. Okay.
It is true. And that's why we got together and created the Association of Talent Acquisition Professionals, ATAP. It's been around a while. There's a really great article on Recruiting Daily. I'll pop it in somewhere here so folks can, or you just look for it. Go site search, since resources, site search Recruiting Daily, put my name, Steve Levy, and the words recruiting organization or recruiting association.
Association.
And you'll find the article that actually I co-wrote with the late, dear, horribly missed Derek Zeller quite a few years back. But that's one of the reasons I enjoy doing that. I enjoy doing webinars to teach. I want folks to be able to, you know, pull back from this cesspool of extra crap that's clogging up processes, clogging up systems, clogging up strategic planning, strategic thinking, and get to the, you know, the core foundational elements. You know, identify what are the brilliant basics that are needed as a foundation to build your career on. Adam Gordon, for example, is doing a great job pushing the message of recruiter enablement. You know, how do we give recruiters, sources, recruiters, EBs, et cetera, the tools, the platforms they need to not make the same freaking mistakes? I hope this email finds you well. How, you know, that.
Hold on, I fell asleep for a minute there.
I know you did. It's happened in the past, by the way.
The standard boilerplate. And I crack up because all of these AI assisted messaging platforms that are like, we'll help you write your message. They all start with, I hope this email finds you well. I hope you've been well. It's like, really? Do you really, really hope that? I'm so impressed by your profile. Yeah. That you read. But I got to ask you.
Yes, sir.
What has been the single, it's going to be tough, but I want you to highlight the single most unexpected benefit of being a sorcerer?
You know how I train new sorcerers? It's over to a. What relationship in your life messed you up and you want to find out how miserable that person is right now?
Oh, cyber stalking.
Cyber stalking. Because one of the lines that I've used in the past was, when I go through phases of how I engage people, and the one thing that has really enamored most people who I reach to out of the blue, I tell them how I found them. I tell them this is the Boolean string I used. And then I follow it with a line. I know it looks a lot like cyber stalking, but in recruiting, we call it research. But that's very helpful.
So you're saying that the most unexpected benefit of the whole thing is that you've become someone that can find anything.
I can find anything. A few weeks ago, true story, a friend of mine who's also a recruiter called me up. Her best friend's daughter went on, I may be butchering this a little bit, went on a date and didn't come home that night, but they knew some things about the person who they may have gone out with.
Okay, this is starting to sound suspicious.
It is. I found them. There was just enough there because, you know, really great sorcerers can take a paragraph that's missing words and phrases.
Mm-hmm. Fill in the blanks.
And use certain heuristics to fill in the blanks. I found the person, found their email, found their cell phone. They texted them. This young lady literally had just fallen asleep and just had forgotten. Things like that.
Okay, so, I'm glad there was a,
No, there was a, no. I'm
glad there wasn't a bad ending.
I'm not going to come
on. Become a private detective.
But that's what we are. But that's what a great sorcerer is, a private detective. You know, nothing is hidden, whether it's overt in the open web or less available on the dark web. We can find it, but it also helps us in the old school stuff. You know, it's how you think. It really is a structured way of thinking. You know, it's a structured way of thinking that we all have our own special algorithms that we use when we get a new search.
What do you do first, right?
What do you do first?
You go for the titles, you go for the keywords, or But you know what though? I used to call it the pendulum approach. You remember that?
I remember that, yeah.
But nowadays I use both the pendulum approach and also something that's a little bit more scientific, which I call iterative method or iterative search, which essentially is and the reason I'm saying that is because there's often this perception that with the pendulum approach there's an aspect of chance. There really is not an aspect of chance. You have to start somewhere. It doesn't matter where you start. The best thing to do is to start wide because it's easier to narrow, but you don't have to. And it's going to swing too narrow, too wide, too narrow, too naive, and eventually settle. But the iterative approach removes that sort of traumatic element of chaos or randomness or luck. And it's basically the scientific method of, okay, my hypothesis is somebody out there has this on their resume, clackety clack. And then, you know, essentially it's kind of like how sharks hunt. You know, I mean, being an avid oceaneer yourself, they pass by you and they get a whiff and they turn around and go another direction and they pass by you. They don't really see you. They just kind of pass by you a few times, getting closer each time because they triangulate. That's the same thing. It's the pendulum approach. You're never going to have a one keyword or one string search that instantly gets you the perfect results. It's always going to be evolving.
It's funny you bring up sharks as an example. A shark's smell is they can smell blood in concentrations like one part per million. And so,
which means they smell you hours before they see you or hear you.
So think about somebody who's a newbie in sourcing. They don't have that acuity. But as they get better and better, the concentration with which they can smell stuff decreases, so they become more effective.
I just had a really funny but probably very offensive thought. It's like the newbie sorcerers are bull sharks. They can't find anything until they literally bump right into it.
No, but you know, that's
not... And eventually they learn to to smell it out. At first it's like bump.
But the bull sharks just leave carnage wherever they go.
Just because they're blind. They just bump into things and bite them. And even if it's a rubber duck, it doesn't know. And then it's like, all right, that wasn't food.
I mean, bull sharks are the purveyors of in malls. They're the ones that send the "I hope you're doing well" type thing. But you know, but the funny thing about this is, you know, it can all be trained. You know,
or learn, trained to accelerate, or learn through experience and getting the black eyes.
We were fortunate, and I know Glenn's on here too. Glenn came a couple of years later to have all learned together, and you know, I don't know how we found each other, but we all worked together. And we were concerned, we were more interested in building. We weren't bragging. None of us were, you know.
No, it started with straight up sharing.
We didn't take it and write our own book and pawn it on.
It started out with, like my first sharing was a newsletter, Cyber Sleuthing newsletter, which was an emailed newsletter in 1998
or 99.
Something like that. Yeah. And I still have the volumes that I shared. But then you know what? Something really weird happened. Something really bad happened. People started to copy and not give hat tips.
Attribution.
No attribution. No, I learned this because that's what we did, right? Yeah. I learned a ton from Glenn and Guttmacher. And I would always say, I learned this from Glenn, or Glenn and I worked on this together, because it makes you, I believe that it gives you more credibility when you, it's like when you're writing a paper and you have references or footnotes. It's, you know, it's still your idea, but you borrowed something from someone else, and standing on the shoulder of giants is how we make progress, right? But what it just turned into this copy and paste and take credit, and in fact, even sometimes straight up lie. I had somebody, a very prominent person, lie to my face and tell me, no, I did not copy your stuff, and I had physical evidence of a confidential document that they obtained. And they denied it. So like when did it become that? And how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, when we started pushing out content and, you know, the original ERE bloggers, I have a picture. I know I've shared it with you.
Yeah. You've shared it with me.
You know, Glenn's one of them. Joel, Joel is there. Heather's there. The other Microsoft,
Microchicks. Yeah.
You know, and you know, we started pushing out content that opened people's eyes, and people just copied it because we made it was so accessible.
But that's okay. Copied it and attributed it. I never had a problem with that because, like I said, we learn and we evolve. It's the denying that you did that just kind of irked
people me. Do that. You know, Jan has seen it a lot lately. I mean, a lot of us have seen it a lot lately.
Yeah. So that kind of,
you know what?
Yeah. ChatGPT. Yeah, that's right. All those models, they're stealing everybody's stuff. That's a good point.
But at this point, honestly, Shally, at this point in my life, you know, getting into the elder statesman, I guess, phase, like you and Dean and whatnot in this profession.
I will tell you what though. Yeah. I know what you're about to say.
Yeah.
I know what you're about to say.
Okay.
Honey,
what am I about to say?
Hold on. What I think is that I am always going to have an advantage over everybody else.
Hear, hear.
You're always going to have an advantage over everybody else. Glenn is always, and this is the advantage. We have, for whatever reason, the ability of independent thought. And while we learned from each other and we copied each other and gave attribution and we went to conferences, there is always going to be something that we create, that we innovate, that is new. No large language model in the world is ever going to create anything new. It is impossible because these language models are built on language that's been given to them. So therefore, by definition, nothing is ever going to be new. They cannot create. They can help you brainstorm. They can help you organize. But large language models aside, copycats aside, That's the advantage. And I honestly think that that may be one of the most salient American traits, is our ingenuity and innovation and creativity. That thirst to constantly, maybe it comes from laziness. I can tell you in Maya, it does. Right? I innovate out of like, I don't want to have to do this three times. So I'm going to spend 3 hours writing a script so that I only have to do it once.
Yeah.
That's how it comes about. Yeah. So maybe it's a positive thing. Maybe it's not. But the point is that's where we continue to advance and push the limits. And so you're right. It's totally fine that everybody copies stuff, because they're not going to be able to come up with the ideas. And if they can come up with the ideas, then yay, I'll copy from them.
Exactly. It's what's in our head. You know, our brains maybe we're just wired this way, Shally. I don't know. I just know that when I'm around you and Glenn and, you know, and Dean and Jimmy and Schneider and Shannon and Cindy and all these other people, and, you know, ABQ, we all get each other. You know, it's like we're on this, you know, mind meld wireless network, a Bluetooth network. We all get
Definitely an affinity there. They call it, scientifically, they call those mirror neurons.
Yes.
That we actually have evolved to adapt to
and we're also,
you know, very, our community.
And we're also very selective as to who we bring in.
And not me.
Yes, you are. Give me
I just got called out. Yeah.
What happens is there are people, I know this for a fact, you know, we go, do you remember, I think it might've been Anaheim that you and I were having a beer together inside and these two, I think people came up to us. We made some comment about, you know, people are walking, we hear them saying, you know, they're like, I'm like the best sorcerer here. Mm-hmm. And we're like choking down our, you know, on spitting
out our beer,
spitting out our beers, going, fine, as long as if you believe that, that's fine. But but then later I recall those folks, we were introduced or something, and they came up to us and they actually apologized, only because they realized that saying things like that, I in no way, shape, or form, I was a, you know, a glorified asshole in the early years of this profession, but
no comment.
But now it's I'm realizing how little I really know, and my only advantage is this craving to continuously want to learn.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of the innovation comes from.
Dan Harris just popped in. He said, "Hi, Dan." Absolutely, it's the creative thoughts and approaches taken mindset. I'm older, so now it's just about making others better, caring less about credit. Absolutely, yeah. Dan. And that's what it's like.
You and I stopped caring about credit a long time ago. And, you know, both of us were always sharing. And there's definitely some sort of like disease that drives us to be altruistic and share, because not everybody does that. But at the end of the day, there are givers and then there are takers. And then there's everybody in between. You know, a few of us are givers, some of us are takers, and then everybody else in between is who's really benefiting. And that's the majority of the population. Unfortunately, what we're seeing right now is the demise of that population by way of an exodus that I have not seen since right after September 11th.
I was thinking the same thing. And what's curious is...
Before the great TSA project. Remember that one?
Oh, gosh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, a lot of people forgot, but I did not forget about that.
Before I jump in, a little history. You know, you had the, 98 is when, you know, the internet was finally unleashed on the world by Al Gore and
yeah, sorry.
And I'm party-wise, we're not going to get into that. But then we have Y2K. We thought the world was going to end on Y2K. You remember that? Then we had 9/11, and the world almost did end for it was bad for a year and a half.
It ended for some.
It did. And as everyone knows, my best friend was firefighter murdered in the towers. I have a personal affinity to, and knowing how that date changed how I think about human beings. And it just took, from then it's been 22 years. But each year I got better and better of understanding what it meant to be human and what it meant to help other people, because your time is really potentially short on this planet.
Time is, yep.
And
limited resource.
But it's gotten now to the point where you know, for so long, HR wanted to have a seat at the table. You know, the Ethan Allen syndrome. I want to have a seat at the table, and they started talking metrics and things like cost per hire, nonsensical shit like cost per hire.
Yeah, but the problem is, as soon as HR got a seat at the table and they're about to sit down, somebody pulled the chair out from
right
out
underneath them. I was about to say something like that. And so then we and TA, we have tried.
And now HR has a bad coccyx and a bad back and,
yeah. You know, needs replacement hips, shit like that. I know that. And, you know, the CEO might be more interested in how much they're making than supporting their members. I digress. But, you know, we continue to work hard. We know the people. We're friends with the people who are trying to drive accountability, efficiency, humanity, candidate experience, logic into TA, and you know, and but it's a damn hard road, because ultimately, you know, the ethos of TA still starts at the top of a company. And there's a book called The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack, written in 1981. I won't go into one thing that he writes in that is, you know, here in Missouri, he was from Missouri, we have a saying. It's called shit rolls downhill.
I'm pretty sure that saying is universal.
It's pretty universal. It's pretty common. Yeah. But how many people in this audience know CEOs who say, I'm really experienced, I'm really good at recruiting, or stuff like that? And maybe they've
anybody who knows a CEO that does that.
That does it. Yes, Mr. Marr, who moved my cheese?
Yep.
The same thing with hiring managers. You know, one of my, in most every conference talk I give, I ask the audience, okay, in the last 30 days, how many people here have wanted to kill a hiring manager? It gets the biggest laugh. It's still there. You know, the challenge for this profession, yeah. Charlie.
There are always new hiring managers, always too. And there are always new recruiters as well. But you know what, though? The juxtaposition of the new recruiter or the new hiring manager is okay as long as there's some sort of residual industrial knowledge. And that's where we've been failing, is that new hiring managers, new recruiters, all of a sudden they reinvent everything as if it never existed before. And there's no institutional knowledge. So we don't relearn. We basically forget everything. And it's not like we're relearning it. We're just reinventing it over and over every couple of years. And every once in a while, you get a company that comes in and raises a false flag. LinkedIn, for example, you know, they made it so that it was literally the easiest thing that you could do to end your job by handing the keys over to LinkedIn. And now look at where it's getting us. So
it's the ChatGPT era.
It happens over and over. I remember the same thing happened to Monster. I remember the same thing happened to CareerBuilder. I remember the same thing happened to Indeed. It happens over and over. And in the meanwhile, somebody will come out with another technology. Right now it's LinkedIn, but the next thing will be, I don't know what. We don't know what it is. And everybody's going to swarm over there, and they're going to get addicted to that, and they're going to have the same problem because they're going to try and reinvent invent everything as if nothing ever existed before them. And all the while, the CFO, not the CEO, the CFO is, recruiting is easy. Anybody can do it.
Yeah, as long as we reduce our cost per hire. It's not a valid recruiting metric, you ding-dong.
Everybody can do it.
Everybody can do it.
Everybody can do recruiting.
Because ChatGPT will make – yeah, it'll make it easy. You know, there's a saying.
I did ask ChatGPT, who is the best goal line developer in the United States? And I got an answer.
Okay.
I guess that's the new kind of sourcing.
Oh, yeah. We, you know, that might be a whole nother conversation as to why, you know.
Well, that's not an answer.
It's not. It's not.
I'm so glad you didn't go there.
No. You know, we by the way, for everyone,
I set that bear trap for myself.
I know. For everyone who's wondering why it's not an answer, is that it's really easy to find the top most prolific Golang dev on GitHub. Or it's also
not verifiable. It's also an opinion from a language model.
I mean, who's the best sourcer? All of us are. We all, it's like the old Indian parable of 12 blind men touching an elephant and describing what they see.
Mm.
You know, we're all good. We're all great. We're all
at that particular elephant park. Yeah. Yep. So what has been in your entire illustrious career,
illustrious?
The single most difficult job you've ever sourced for or recruited for, or whatever, like the single most challenging rack? And more than anything, I'd like to know why it was difficult, not as much as to like what it was, but like, so why was it difficult, the most difficult, and why was it difficult?
That's lots of positions, but I mean,
and I'm sure you got some funny ones, some hilarious ones. I don't want the funny one. I want the hardest one. Dude. I want the one that you literally almost quit about, the one that you pulled, the one that was open for 6 years, or some ridiculous anecdote like that.
I don't think I never quit. Here's the challenge.
No, I said almost.
I know
the one that you considered quitting about.
I have to ponder that one here. This is putting me on the block on the block trying to remember it. On the clock trying to remember. Here's the challenge. The challenge was always, before I developed my philosophies on doing intake strategy sessions,
mm-hmm.
in your early years of recruiting, here's the job description. The hiring manager knows everything.
Gospel.
You realize they don't know.
It's here's the rec. Yeah. And in fact, they didn't even write the rec, but yeah, that's right. It is very much the early way to do it when you first get started, to take the rec and start looking.
And so ultimately it gets that, if you don't know what you're looking for, how will you know when you find
first, you think you know what you're looking for, but you don't.
Yeah. And it's like, I think, and so without articulating what it is, that's always going to create problems and lengthen things out. The hardest one, it wasn't that it was hard. It just that it took early on, I, and this friend of mine, his name is Jerry Ballier. Jerry worked at AT&T Labs. Remember back in the days, Shelly, where you could, you go www.bell-lab/who.
Oh yeah. They had, Xerox had labs.xerox.com.
I mean, everybody, phone numbers, emails, you name it was there. Mm-hmm. I knew what we're
doing. Now you go to archive.org and you can still get them.
You can still get it. I know. but baby sources in the audience, that's what it was like before sources started making people go, holy shit, the door's wide open. We have to close it a little bit.
Yeah.
But back then it took me from the time I first, I remember I emailed him, then I called him. I was able to get his home phone number. None of that was really hard in those days. It wasn't hard. 6 months. It took just a couple of weeks just to get it back and forth. We were building really probably the most incredible technology I've ever been associated with. If anybody knows databases, then the names Ted Codd and Michael Stonebreaker should come to a mind. They were on our board. No, they were not the OGs. Oh, we're the OGs of Source Goldberg.
Yeah, we are.
No, we there are several other OGs too. But we had there was massive science and patent behind the way that this platform was going to massively reduce latencies of searches by massive orders of magnitude. And Jerry was in, I think, Avi Lifshitz's lab in AT&T. Avi is a very, very well-known database data scientist. It took.
Yeah, he was Ingress, wasn't he? Paradigm, Ingress.
Ingress was Mike Stone was Mike Stonebreaker with James Wong, UCal Berkeley. There, all these things, all these people are related.
That was the beginning of it.
Yeah. That was the beginning. It was wonderful actually knowing those people, getting to know them too. But it was persistence. It was trying to find it one angle to get him to look at Dan. Look to get him to finally come to the table and, you know, like reeling. And, you know, when you got a good fish on the line, if you pull it back really hard, the chances of losing that fish, getting him is really high. So you have to be, feel tension in the line. And 6 months later, I finally got him to, you know, after he'd interviewed and answered every question from every possible angle, you know, including what I think of the founders as human beings and stuff like that. And, you know, 100% honesty, finally got him on board and he made that massive difference. But really, no searches have been, I never threw up my hands and said, I'm not working on this. I just changed my approaches and it was always okay. Looking for a different approach.
Yeah, and that's the perseverance.
Yeah, and so tenacity. It's not working, you know, if your approach keeps you running into a stone wall, why are you doing that over and over again? And then don't complain that it's not working because you're the one who's running into the damn wall, you idiot. Change, modify, adapt, overcome.
Don't be the bull shark.
Don't be the bull shark. Yeah. You know? Don't leave blood and gore and guts wherever you go. You know, finesse your way. Find a way. Use your brain. The most important AI tool you have is an AI. It's real intelligence.
Yeah. You know, that makes me think of or remember this analogy that I remember talking about in some radio for maybe it was NPR or something like that, where there's this misconception that sourcing or recruiting is finding the right candidate. Like you just hone in on that one person. But the reality is it's a series of trials and errors and failures. There's really no, there really is no eureka moment where you're like, oh, I found it, the candidate, you know, this is the one. What happens is There's a lot of, I wonder what happens if I do this or if I do that. Maybe they'll take a look at this. And then every once in a while, you send a candidate into the hiring manager, kind of half expecting them to say, heck no. And every once in a while, they go, where'd you find this person? Oh, my God, they're perfect. And in the back of your head, you're going, really? I sent that one to you almost to see if you would fall for it. But that's the one you want. So it never is like that light bulb moment. It's this continue. It's 99 failures and one success.
Well, that's the definition of a recruiter or source or whichever one you want to use. No, 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 no. Maybe.
Maybe. Right.
No.
We'll try this one.
Referral.
Wait, really? You like that one?
No, no, no. Yes. And what happens is it's almost relief. There's that feeling of peace and calm, like,
I don't have to chase after this anymore. You know, for now.
I can put off killing that hiring manager until the next search.
I've got a couple of people there. They're looking at, they're interviewing. That's true. Yeah. By the way, that's how I measure my sourcers. That is my universal metric. That what you just described.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, I've got a minimum of three. That's because I've tracked that in the history of the information that I have for this particular client. In engineering, they have an average of 5 interviews per hire, and the rest of the company, they have an average of 6 interviews per hire. That means that sometimes hiring managers would interview 7 or 8 people, and sometimes hiring managers interview 2 or 3. But the most part, if we have 5 people interviewing, we're probably going to get a hire.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, if the sourcer has produced 3 people that have gotten interviews, we can move on to the next rec. We'll come back to that one if we need to, but we can move on to the next rec because the pressure is off. Yeah. We got 3 people that are interviewing. Maybe another 2 will come in through other ways, whatever. But, you know, and that's not to say that we're done. That's not to say that you're off the hook, but that means that what you just, it's what you said. Okay.
You know,
you got 3, the pressure's off. But let's also do something else.
But also what the truly exceptional people in TA sourcing and recruiting do is, yes, as you're getting these people in and accepted by the HM, go to them and say, now that you've spoken to a few people, is there something else? Is there something we're missing? Is there something you'd like to add? Is anything that, oh my goodness, I forgot this.
I should have told you about that or whatever.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a good
That's always a good, you know, like interim.
I call it recalibrating, but really isn't. It's not recalibrating.
No, but think of it like a seventh inning stretch.
It's more, yeah. It's like digging a little deeper. Because you're not restarting. You're just,
No.
Getting a little extra flavor. Somebody said tasting the soup. Does it need a little bit of salt? Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's exactly what it is, Shay. Yeah. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I like that. So dude, I can't let you go without asking you the two standard questions.
Okay, yes, sir.
You know, we're getting pretty close to time up, so I don't want to cut you off. There's the one question I just started asking, which I'd love to get your answer to, is who should be on the show next? Just one person. I mean, I know you have a list of people, and you're more than welcome to email me the whole list, but I just want one person right now that we can contact and see if they're interested. They may not be, but see if they're interested.
Only because I adore him like a younger brother, and he's on. He just commented. It's Radloff.
Okay. I was going to say Jerry Crispin because no.
No, no, not Jerry. But
you said younger brother, so I thought Jared.
But everyone here, I'm looking, but people like other people who are in this chat, you know, how could you not like what David Maher is doing for the community? How could you not? He was the one who started doing Blue Devil.
Unfortunately, that doesn't count because he's been here already.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, but you're right. 100% big ups to David. However, he's a repeat offender. I think he's been here twice.
Then we don't
have no problem bringing him in again. I like the idea of Pete. Someone suggested Jung Kim. So
Jung is firstly, he's hysterical.
We got a plus one on that one.
Yeah, on that one. You know, Jung is Jung. Can you write me the longest Boolean in that you've ever shipped? What's the longest Boolean you've ever written? It's just his Jung. He came out to New York a couple of years back and. You know, I took him to Brooklyn, had ribs and stuff like that. And I never stopped laughing. Jung is hysterical. He's a funny, funny person.
A sense of humor is required in our industry. Probably not, but it should be.
It really.
Exactly. David, you weren't on twice? Damn it. All right, we got to fix that. You're coming back.
But then from a younger, I really like... You know, have you had Susanna Fraser on?
We've invited her, and still trying to get her. So,
Carrie Collier, just because of how grateful she is, it's just wonderful. We're always looking for people, and I know you do this too. Who's going to take the baton if we ever decide to move on? There are definitely people in this community who have shown that they want to and will.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I'm definitely keen on bringing them all on the show.
Yeah. One more. Sarah Goldberg.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's right.
That way you can piss off Mike Goldberg. You can have the Goldberg chance. Goldberg. Hey, University of Georgia boy. Come on. Bulldog.
Oh. Here's the last question.
Okay, yes, sir. Last question.
Last question, because I know we're running. We're 9, 10 minutes out.
Okay.
What do you want folks at home or in their car or whatever over the weekend? A lot of people watch this rebroadcast over the weekend. So what do you want people to walk away with and think about deeply? I want you to give them something, not an answer, but a question. To think about over the next couple of days to make them, you know, provoke some sort of introspection or thought. Have to be wise. It could what do you want to leave them with? And it could be about what we just talked about. So what do you got?
I don't think it's wise at all. It's what are you going to do now? Now, next couple of weeks, the remainder of the year, next year. To leave talent acquisition in a better place than when you entered into it.
All of TA, not just sourcing.
All of TA, not just sourcing. You want to break it down into its elements? Be my guest. What are you going to do to be the kind of sourcer that others look to for innovation and honesty and simplicity? What are you going to do as a recruiter that other recruiters are going to look to for innovation, honesty, simplicity, humanity? What are you going to do as an employment brander to be more honest.
It kind of goes back to your leaving a legacy thing.
It really is. It's all about leaving a legacy. And it goes back to me, I finally realized, and Jerry, as we've had this talk as well, it's I crave simplicity and honesty. Mm-hmm. And what can we do to engender,
simplify
things? Simplify for real, because if we're going to throw all this TA tech and AI into our profession, what we should be doing first is ask ourselves, are our processes, our systems, our metrics, our planning, our impact, are they as optimal as they can be?
Definitely not.
Otherwise, because it's a rhetorical question, obviously, because if you are not re-engineering before you put stuff on to make things better, all you're doing is really engineering more inefficiencies putting more inefficiencies into the system.
Interesting. So I kind of hear you saying the opposite of do more with less. You're kind of saying do less.
Do less, you know, brilliant basics. If your cornerstone,
don't add more tools
until
refine.
Until
produce. Yeah.
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 Look, you know me. You and I are both nerds. You and I are absolute nerdy nerd, technical nerds, and the technical stuff that goes into our profession, anything in the TA stack, we know. And we can make a great living talking about that one, but technology for the sake of technology.
Yeah, everybody likes their toys, but yeah,
they do like them. And
I've always been one of the ones that just, if it doesn't work for me, I'm not going to talk about it.
Look, there's a saying.
That's just me.
Look, there's a saying: if it's written in Python, it's machine learning. If it's written in PowerPoint, it's AI. Mm-hmm. We're at that phase right now. Everything is AI. The marketing has worked well to cause many C-levels to go, we've got to get AI in here. CHRs, we've got to get AI in here.
Yeah.
Well, the challenge is when you bring in AI, you also bring in artificial stupidity.
Yeah, it comes right along with it. Yeah.
Can't help it.
So that's the deep thought. How are you going to leave things better and maybe add to that, do less?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, my friend. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Shally, it's been too long.
Been a hoot.
25 years.
Yeah, 25 years. Yeah, but I'm not traveling as much, so I don't get to see you that much. But we'll be changing that soon.
I hope so, too.
All right, buddy. All right, y'all take care. Everybody out there, as I always say, be kind to each other, and we'll see you next Friday. Bye-bye.